Blaze. "Blaze McCarthy," she said in a clipped voice, sounding distracted. "Hi, Blaze." It was her doctor, which brought Blaze rapidly back to Earth. "I have your CVS results. Everything is perfect." She said it quickly to allay any worry, and Blaze heaved a sigh of relief. She hadn't realized how anxious about it she was. "That's great, thank you. Do you still want to know the baby's sex?" She checked before she told her. "I'd like that very much," she said with tears in her eyes. It was an important moment. Her baby was healthy. The rest was icing on the cake. "It's a boy," the doctor said, smiling. She loved delivering that kind of news. A healthy baby and a happy mom. Blaze had had no preference about sex. She just liked the idea of knowing, but hearing that it was a boy suddenly made it all the more real now. She was going to have a son. She hoped he'd look just like Simon. Then, as she thought it, the tears rolled down her cheeks. She hadn't seen him come in, but Mark had walked into her office when she hung up, and he looked shocked to see her crying. "Are you okay? Is something wrong?" He knew the doctor had called and hoped nothing serious was going on. "I'm fine." He handed her research on a British politician involved in an international money laundering scandal, and she gave him back some of the earlier research with her notes on it. And then he stopped and turned around on the way out of the room. "I almost forgot to tell you. You get all the plum jobs around here. They're sending you to the Cannes Film Festival to do a special. It's the third week in May, followed by the Monaco Grand Prix the week after. You can stay over for the Memorial Day weekend at the end of it if you want. I'll book you a reservation at Hotel du Cap." And as he said it, instead of pleased, she looked horrified and almost cried again. "Oh my God, I can't stay over. Salima's recital is that Friday night, the last day of the Grand Prix race. She's been preparing for it for 6 months. I can't miss it no matter what. I do it to her every time." She had missed her high school graduation interviewing the president of South Korea. She couldn't do it to her again. "Mark, I have to be back in New York on Friday afternoon." "I'll book the reservation, but you'll have to work it out and leave the morning of the last day of the race or wrap things up the day before." Mark looked sympathetic. He knew how much the recital meant to Salima. Blaze had been telling him all about it for months. "I have to. Salima would never forgive me, and I don't want to let her down." She was going to fix this right away and email Charlie about it immediately to warn him of when she'd have to leave the Grand Prix. Whatever she did, no matter how important they thought it was, this time she couldn't fail Salima. Once Blaze knew the baby was a boy and that it was healthy, she found herself thinking about Simon more and more often. She questioned if it had been a mistake to find out what the sex was. Now she kept wondering if he would look like Simon, and what Simon would say when she told him. She still had no intention of telling him during the pregnancy. She wasn't going to intrude on his life, and she was only 4 months pregnant. It was still a long way off, but he seemed to be constantly on her mind. When the ratings came out in May, Blaze's were stronger than they'd ever been. Zack came down to her office to congratulate her personally, and Charlie gave her a bottle of champagne, which she took home to Becky and Salima that night. They opened it, and Blaze poured a glass for the two girls. They toasted her with it, and she clinked a glass with a tiny sip in it. Somehow Salima could tell and asked her mother why she wasn't drinking more. Blaze was always amazed by everything she noticed. Her hearing was so acute, she could tell it wasn't a full glass. "Somebody has to stay sober around here," Blaze laughed and changed the subject. But she was very happy about her ratings, too. It would relieve some of the pressure on her, for now at least. And 2 weeks later, she left to cover the Cannes Film Festival, and then the Monaco Grand Prix. She stayed at the Hotel du Cap Edenrock during the film festival, and then moved to the Hermitage in Monte Carlo for the Grand Prix. Both hotels were superb. There wasn't a luxury hotel around the world that Blaze hadn't been in, a resort or spa where she hadn't stayed while doing an interview or a special. And there were a number of celebrities staying at both hotels. She enjoyed the film festival, and the car race using the streets of Monaco was always exciting. She was invited to parties on yachts and in fabulous villas, and one at the palace hosted by the prince and princess. and on that particular assignment, she had to admit that her life was as glamorous as people said. She was constantly surrounded by movie stars and royalty, and she told Salima about it when she called her every day. Salima was diligently preparing for her recital and pressed Blaze again to make sure she'd be there. "I'm flying back that morning," Blaze reminded her again. "I'm taking the early flight, and with the time difference, I'll be here by noon. I'll be back in plenty of time for the recital. I can even help you dress." They had picked out a long white silk dress that looked beautiful on Salima, and it had been hanging in her closet for the last month. And she and Luciana had designed the program and what Salima would be singing. They had chosen all the pieces that best showed off her voice. And she had texted Simon that she wished he could be there too. They had graduation at Caldwell that weekend and he had to attend. But he couldn't have gone to the recital because of her mother anyway. After 4 months of silence between them, he felt awkward about seeing her. He thought about Blaze frequently, and when he asked about her, Salima said that her mother was okay, and he hoped that that was true. Blaze called Salima from the south of France every day, and reported on the stars she'd seen and the events she'd been to, but by the end of her trip, Salima could only focus on her recital. By the time Blaze was ready to come home, Salima was in a panic over it. "You have to calm down. It's going to be fine," her mother told her. "No, it's not. I'll be awful, and you better not miss your plane. You won't, Mom, right? They won't make you stay longer or send you somewhere else?" It had happened so often before that Salima was afraid she wouldn't make it this time, and Blaze was terrified of that too. She was so nervous about it that she got up 2 hours earlier than she needed to get to the airport in time to make her plane. And she was leaving her crew at the Hermitage in Monte Carlo to fly home later that day. Blaze was going home early for Salima and had warned the network that she would. Blaze checked out of the hotel in plenty of time, and a limousine drove her to the Nice airport. She was catching a direct flight that only ran twice a day from Nice to New York on Air France, and she handed her ticket and passport to an Air France agent at the first-class counter when she arrived. She knew that everything was in order, and she was half an hour early, which was rare for her. Her plans had gone with the precision of a Swiss clock so far that day. "I'm sorry," the ticket agent looked at her with regret. "Your flight has been cancelled. We had a mechanical problem, and the plane didn't get here from New York." "No," Blaze said, panicking. "That's not possible. I have to get to New York." This couldn't be happening to her. She wouldn't let it. "I understand," the agent said pleasantly. "We'll have another plane here in 3 hours. Your flight to New York will leave at noon." Blaze made a rapid calculation, and with the time difference, getting through customs and leaving the airport, she could be at the apartment by 2 o'clock, 3 at the latest. It was later than she'd promised Salima, but the recital wasn't until 7 o'clock, and Salima didn't have to leave the house until 6. Tully was driving them, and a hairdresser was coming to do Salima's hair at 3. "All right, that'll work," Blaze said, determined not to get excited about it. Even with the delay, she would be there for Salima. Charlie had been very nice about her not being there for the last day of the race. Her crew was covering it for her. Blaze had been at everything else all week, and she had told Charlie she had enough film to give them more than they needed. She went to the first-class lounge then to wait for the flight that was leaving at noon. She went to the desk in the lounge at 11 to make sure that everything was on schedule. The woman looked at her computer, and then back at Blaze with a reassuring smile. "You're fine. What time will we be boarding?" All Blaze wanted to do was get on the plane. She hadn't texted Salima about the delay. She didn't want to worry her, and she would still be home with plenty of time, or just enough to help Salima get ready and dress her. 11:50, the Air France agent said, still smiling. But the dazzling airline smiles were beginning to look fake. "Then the flight must be late. It's supposed to leave at noon. If you board 300 passengers starting at 11:50, we're going to leave an hour late." "We always make it up in the air," the woman said. They were the kind of answers that were supposed to lull naive passengers into believing they were on time when they weren't. Blaze knew better. She traveled too much not to know the pat phrases they used when they were lying to their passengers. Blaze did not want to be lied to this time. "Is the plane here?" Blaze asked, sounding curt, and the woman in the Air France uniform got instantly defensive. Passengers like Blaze who demanded real information were their least favorite to deal with. "Of course," she said with a haughty look. But at 12:15 they hadn't boarded yet, and Blaze was beginning to seriously panic. "Look, I have to get to New York as soon as possible. I have the feeling you don't have the plane here yet. I can't play around here. If I fly back to Paris, what can I get on to get me to New York?" It would slow her down, she knew, but maybe less than a flight from Nice that might not leave for several hours, and she no longer believed a word the woman said. History had proven her right too many times before, and this time it really mattered to her. She would rather have kept the President of the United States waiting than be late for Salima's recital, or worse, miss it entirely. She shuddered at the thought. The agent checked her computer again. She said that she had a flight leaving for Paris in 10 minutes, and the doors weren't closed yet. But she said that Blaze's bags were on the direct flight, and they couldn't put her on the Paris flight until they got her bags off the one she had already checked into. "Which means I can't make the Paris flight. Okay, let's get my bags off now. What can you get me onto after you do?" "I have a flight leaving for Paris in an hour." "Perfect." She was reminding herself to breathe and not lose control. "But it's full, except for one coach seat in the back row. Will you take it?" she asked with an evil grin, delighted to be punishing Blaze for the trouble she was causing. "I'll take it," Blaze said without hesitation. The woman punched something into the computer, and then shook her head, while Blaze tried to resist the overwhelming urge to strangle her. "Sorry, there was an error in the computer. There's an infant in that seat. The flight is completely booked." "When can you get me to Paris, and from there to New York?" "We have a 3 o'clock," she said primly. "You can connect with our 5:40 flight to Kennedy." "What time does it land?" Blaze asked through clenched teeth. "It lands at 7:55 p.m. local time." 8 o'clock. Blaze did a rapid calculation. If she landed at 8, she'd get her bags and be out of customs by 9, and in the city at 10, completely missing the recital. "That won't work," Blaze said with a deep sigh of exasperation. "What other city can you get me out of? London, Zurich, Frankfurt, anything you've got. I have to be in New York City by 6 p.m., which means I can land no later than 4. It was 1 p.m. in Nice by then, and the direct flight was going nowhere. They weren't even boarding the plane. "I still need to get my bags off this plane." "We have a baggage handler strike here today, just a partial one. 1 out of 3 baggage handlers didn't come to work." Welcome to France. Terrific. She was ready to kill somebody, and would have gladly left her bags in France if she could just get to New York, with or without them. She didn't care. But even that wasn't possible because of security. And with that, they announced that her original 9 a.m. flight was leaving at 3 p.m. from Nice, and would be boarding at 2:10. Blaze did another rapid calculation. The flight would arrive at 5 p.m. local time. She could be in the city at 7. But she couldn't get Salima ready and take her to the concert. She'd have to meet her there, and it would be close. If there were any further delays, she'd be screwed, and despite the best of intentions, she would miss the recital Salima had prepared for months. "It sounds like the 3 o'clock from here is going to be my best bet," Blaze said to the agent. "I always thought so, madame," she said with pursed lips. "No, you thought so when it was leaving at noon, and before that at 9 a.m. It hasn't done either, and if the damn plane isn't here from Paris now so we can board at 2:10, I'm going to have hysterics in the airport," Blaze said, beginning to seriously lose her cool. "I have to get to New York." "I'm sure you will, madame. Try to be patient." "Look," Blaze said, willing to lie through her teeth if it would impress them. "My name is Blaze McCarthy. I am a journalist in Network News, and I have a meeting in New York to interview the President of the United States tonight, and I need you to get me there." Blaze was willing to do anything to get on a plane to New York, even lie. She couldn't disappoint Salima again. "Very well. We'll pre-board you," she said, as though pre-boarded seats would leave sooner than the others. It made no difference, Blaze knew, except that you got a jump start on the champagne, and she couldn't drink now anyway, which might have helped. She hadn't had this frustrating a day in years. And all that mattered to her was Salima and being there for her recital. She would have paid double for the seat on the plane if they could guarantee getting her there on time. "Shall I take your bags off, Miss McCarthy?" she said with a vacant smile. "Of course not. We just agreed that I'm taking this flight to New York. Why would you take my bags off now, especially when you didn't before, when I did want them taken off and you said you had a strike?"
"We do."
"Fine. Just leave my bags on." She had the ticket stubs for her checked luggage in her purse. She texted Salima then that her flight had been delayed, but she would get there. She couldn't meet her at the apartment, and would meet her at the concert hall. She would be there no matter what. It was 7 a.m. in New York by then, and she was sure that Salima was still asleep. Instead, she texted back within seconds. "Please, please, please get there. I need you." Her words ripped Blaze's heart out, and she started to feel sick. It had been a stressful morning, and she was terrified there would be some further delay. "I promise I'll be there," she texted back, and Salima answered back with, "Okay." Blaze prayed she was telling Salima the truth. After that, Blaze waited tensely until they announced the flight to New York, which began boarding at 2:15, another 5 minutes late. Blaze headed toward her gate, and already exhausted, she boarded the plane and took her seat, and turned down magazines, newspapers, pajamas, toiletries, orange juice, and champagne. It felt like a bazaar with everything they offered. She accepted a bottle of water and sank back into her seat, praying they would close the doors soon. She texted Salima that she was on the plane, and then had to turn off her phone before she got a response. And at 3:15, they slowly rolled away from the gate. She should have been landing in New York by then. If she had, it would have worked perfectly. Now she wasn't sure. They finally took off and headed toward New York, and Blaze sat nervously, glancing at her watch for the first 2 hours, and then gave up. There was nothing more she could do. She would have to do all her rushing on the ground at JFK. And before she took a nap in the comfortable seat, she told the purser that she needed to verify VIP assistance on the ground to get through the terminal and customs quickly. She told him the story about interviewing the president, too. She didn't know if he believed her or not, but he said he'd check what he could do. And after that, she watched the movie for a while and fell asleep. She didn't wake up until they were serving the meal, most of which she didn't eat. And after that, 3 different flight attendants asked her for autographs. She wasn't in the mood, but signed them anyway. She was tense for the rest of the flight, checking every half hour on their ETA. "I thought you were supposed to make up time in the air," she said, looking anxious. "Yes, but we're fighting headwinds today." Blaze felt like she was fighting all of Air France, headwinds, and the universe. It had been a nightmare so far, of contradictions, delays, and lies, which were standard fare these days for flying on all airlines in every part of the world. It wasn't unique to Air France. She went back to sleep then under the blanket, and felt the gentle roundness of her stomach. She would be 5 months pregnant in a few days, and she was wearing loose shirts and tops that covered the slight bulge. Unless you looked very carefully, it really didn't show yet, but she knew it would soon. She had managed to conceal Salima until she was 6 months pregnant, but after that the cat was out of the bag. She had been a young network star then, just starting out, and people thought it was cute, even her producers. She'd been 27 years old. She didn't know how cute anyone would think it was at 47 and unmarried. She suspected that Zack would be less than amused, particularly if it caused a problem for them. Blaze intended to see that it didn't, but she was concerned. It could even start Zack on a bad roll again, looking for another Susie Quentin, or worse, another Blaze McCarthy. But there was nothing she could do. She would have to take a few weeks off to have the baby. She smoothed her shirt over her belly and lay in her seat, praying the plane toward New York. So far, they were on time, and the only thing that could delay them further now was if they had to circle the airport in New York instead of land due to storms or traffic. She had tea and a light meal before they landed. It was foie gras, smoked salmon, cheese, and champagne. She skipped the champagne and ate the cheese and foie gras. And 20 minutes before they landed, The flight attendants put everything away and asked them to bring up their seats. Blaze went to brush her hair, and suddenly realized that she was going to have to wear the dark blue linen slacks and white shirt she had on, and sandals, to the recital in New York. She wouldn't have time to go home and change. She quickly brushed her teeth, combed her hair, and put on makeup, and she looked very chic and impeccable when she went back to her seat. Even in casual clothes, she looked like a star. But she was chic for the French Riviera, not New York. At least Salima didn't care, as long as she was there for the performance, and she prayed God she would be. It was 5:01 in New York when they landed, and there was an Air France VIP escort waiting for her. They took her off the plane first and literally ran with her to immigration and stayed with her while she waited for her bags. A porter and the VIP person took her to customs, and she said she had nothing to declare. It was 5:29 when she left customs and raced outside to the curb. Mark had arranged a town car for her since Tully was with Salima, and Blaze texted her as soon as she got in the car, or tried to, only to discover that her cell phone was dead. So Salima had no idea that her mother had landed and was in the car. She tried to call her from the car phone, but Salima's phone was off. The driver wove her expertly through traffic, and it was 6:45 when they approached Lincoln Center in rush hour traffic, where Salima would be singing at Alice Tully Hall. Blaze got out and literally ran across the plaza to the theater and produced the ticket she had fortunately put in her purse in Nice. She was so glad she had it with her. Luciana had arranged a front row seat for her, as well as seats for Becky and Mark. Blaze was out of breath when she took her place between them, and Mark looked relieved when she got there and beamed. Blaze glanced up at the empty stage with the grand piano on it. There were two other students performing after Salima, and she was scheduled to go on first. Blaze had just made it by the skin of her teeth, but she suddenly realized that this was the first time she ever had, and she had never tried this hard to come home. Something had changed. Suddenly, not being there for Salima seemed wrong, and moving heaven and earth to be there for her was right, and Blaze certainly had. The audience took their places, and the stage manager turned down the lights as Blaze held her breath, and a moment later, Salima walked onto the stage with Luciana, who left her front and center, close to the edge of the stage. She was wearing a sad, worried look, and Blaze realized that Salima still didn't know her mother was there. And with a sudden, surprising gesture, Blaze left her seat, took two steps toward the stage, and said just loudly enough for Salima to hear, "I'm here." And suddenly, Salima beamed. She had heard her, and a moment later the performance began. She sang like an angel. The crowd applauded thunderously when she took her bow, and Luciana led her proudly off the stage into the wings. The thrill of victory was on Salima's face, and Blaze hadn't stopped crying while she sang. It had been the most beautiful night of her life. Blaze found her backstage afterward, and Salima threw herself into her arms. "You came. You did it. I didn't think you would. I damn near had to hijack a plane to do it. I nearly assaulted a ticket agent in Nice in the first-class lounge. I got here 2 minutes before you walked on stage." "Thank you for telling me you were here," she said to her mother. "My performance wouldn't have been the same if I didn't know you were. I did it all for you, Mom." And as she said it, Blaze started crying again. She was so proud of her, and so was Luciana. And Salima went back to take another bow at the end. Blaze took Salima, Mark, and Becky to Harry's Cipriani afterward, and Luciana joined them a little while later. Salima said she was ravenous. She had eaten very little all day, she'd been so nervous. And Blaze told her again how beautiful it had been. Luciana had had the performance videotaped, and Blaze couldn't wait to see it again. And on the way to the restaurant, Salima had texted Simon to tell him how well it had gone. She stood outside the restaurant for a minute to listen to his text, and he told her that he was proud of her, too, and he wanted her to send him one of the CDs. She texted him back and promised she would, and she told him that her mom had been there, and made it just in time. The white silk dress they had gotten for the recital looked beautiful on Salima. and Becky had bought a new dress, too, at Barney's. And Blaze laughed about what a mess she was, in shirt and slacks and gold sandals, wrinkled beyond belief after 8 hours on the plane. "I don't care if you showed up naked, Mom. I'm so happy you were there," Salima beamed. "Me too," Blaze said as they held hands. Blaze leaned over and kissed her then. She had never been prouder in her life of Salima for her accomplishments, hard work, and outstanding performance, and of herself for finally showing up when it counted. For once, network news had taken a back seat to her family, and Salima had come first. It was the happiest night of Salima's life, and Blaze's too. And as she sat smiling at Salima, Blaze felt the baby move for the first time. Chapter 17. Salima was coasting on the excitement of her recital all weekend. Luciana called to tell her again how fantastic she'd been. Blaze sent Luciana 2 dozen red roses to thank her, and 2 dozen pink ones to Salima, and all of them were in high spirits. They went to the park on Saturday, and out to dinner in the West Village, at a noisy new place Salima had heard about that was full of young people. And the three of them celebrated all over again. And on Sunday, Salima and Becky went out to the park for a concert, and Blaze finally got some time to unpack from her trip. There were clothes lying all over her room, and she looked disheveled in a big white shirt, bare feet and jeans, with her bright red hair flying loose after she'd washed it that morning. She was trying to make order out of chaos when the doorbell rang, right after they left. She thought it was Salima and Becky having forgotten something and left their key in the apartment, since the doorman didn't call from downstairs to announce a guest. Blaze pulled the front door open with a smile, expecting to see the girls. "Forget your keys, ladies," she teased them, and found herself looking at Simon, in khaki slacks and a white shirt, with a blazer over his arm. She had no idea what to say when she saw him. It was like opening a door and seeing a ghost, and he could see it on her face as she suddenly went pale. "Oh, I'm sorry, I thought it was the girls. What are you doing here, and why didn't they announce you downstairs?" Blaze said. She wasn't angry, just surprised, and she was so stunned she didn't invite him to come in. They just stood there in the doorway, staring at each other, and Blaze felt a wave of emotion wash over her, which she tried to conceal. But Simon had seen a glimpse of it in her eyes. "I guess the doorman still thinks I live here, or likes me or something." Simon looked at her with gentle eyes. "Are you busy, or can I come in?" he asked cautiously, not sure if she would let him. "Sorry, yes. To both. I'm busy, and you can come in. I just got back from France on Friday. I was unpacking." And she was still awash with the good feelings of Friday night. "I hear Salima's performance was a smash hit," Simon said as he followed Blaze into the familiar hall and then into the living room where she led him. They had sat there before, though very rarely. It felt too formal to him. He preferred hanging out in the kitchen with her, her home office, or her bedroom. But he was an outsider now. He didn't live there. Blaze tried not to think of it as they sat down. She had no idea why he'd come, except maybe to see Salima, which she couldn't help thinking was presumptuous of him, without even calling first to ask if he could. It seemed unlike him. He was generally better behaved. "She was fantastic," Blaze said with a smile. "I suppose you've come to see her. She and Becky just went out. That's why I thought you were them. I don't think they'll be back for a while." She was treating him like a guest or an old friend, not a man she had once loved, and still did. "I came to see you," he said quietly. "And I apologize for not calling first. I was afraid if I did, you wouldn't see me." He was right. She wouldn't have, she thought to herself. But she didn't say it to him. She just nodded. "When did you get back to New York?" she asked politely. "Last night. We had commencement yesterday. I'm through at Caldwell. I wanted to see you in person. I apologize for my silence. I know it was wrong not to at least email you. I just had to work things out, and it took time. I didn't want to call you until I sorted it out. All of it," he said, looking her in the eye. He was as direct and honest with her as he had always been. You don't need to apologize, Simon, she said softly and looked away. I knew it was over when you left. I guess it was foolish of me to think it could work with us. I know now it couldn't, but it took me a while to realize it and accept it. I hope everything worked out well for you. She was trying to be gracious, but she really didn't want to hear the details about Megan. It would have hurt too much, even now, especially now with the baby. Things worked out the way they were meant to. I really questioned if I wanted to stay in this kind of work. Eric and I talked a lot about it. He thinks I have a gift, so I took the job at the Institute for Special Education for the fall. Eric thought it would be a good fit. He was great. It was really time for me to move on to something bigger. And I didn't want to just take a job because of you. I had to do it for myself and make sure this is the career I want. I know that now. I had some doubts about it for a while. The school for the blind he was referring to was in New York. What else would you have done? She was startled to hear that he had considered other lines of work and would have given this one up. Eric was right. He had a gift. And Salima and countless others were proof of that. Even her singing studies were thanks to him. He had made both their lives better while he was there, even with his soufflés. She smiled at the memory of the time they'd shared and their brief affair. I thought about opening a restaurant or working in one if I couldn't afford my own. I mean a great restaurant, like La Grenouille. I've never done anything with the training I have, except for friends. He smiled at her. I have a gift for that, too, and I had a secret dream of being a chef. I've put that away for now, but at least I'm clear about it, and it doesn't feel like a sacrifice. I'm excited about the new job. I outgrew Caldwell a while ago. I thought so, too, she agreed, surprised by what he was saying. She had never realized that he was serious about being a chef. She thought he was just having fun, but he was very good at that, too. He was a man of many talents. And I've always wanted to live in France and work in my uncle's vineyards. I think the wine business is fascinating. I was thinking about moving to Bordeaux, but I decided not to do that either. Actually, my uncle was less enthused about it than I was. I worked for him for 2 summers in my teens, and I almost burned the place down once with fireworks. He was afraid I'd screw up his business and burn down the chateau. He grinned, and she laughed. Well, you certainly had some interesting options. And you can always do either of those later, the restaurant and the family wine business. But it sounds like you made the right choice for now. It hurt looking at him and making idle conversation. She hoped it didn't show. He was as beautiful and appealing as ever. I hope so, he said about his career decision, looking very young. The age difference between them seemed vast to Blaze now, and she felt foolish for ever thinking he'd want a life with her. He hadn't even figured out what he wanted to be when he grew up, and was only just beginning to. He needed a woman his age to go in different directions and try things out with him. Her life was already established, and not as fluid and flexible as his. And I can always work as a sous chef somewhere on weekends if I want. It might be fun. And the family business isn't going anywhere. My mother thought I'd hate living in Bordeaux. She couldn't wait to leave when she was young. I'm going over this summer for a few weeks to visit family at the end of June. She knew he spoke French fluently, which made it easy for him. It was a real advantage she didn't have when she was there. I just came back from the south of France, the Cannes Film Festival and the Monaco Grand Prix. It's always crazy, but I love it there, she said, keeping things light. What are you doing this summer? He asked her. His eyes never left hers for an instant. And he looked as though he wanted to say something else, but didn't dare. We're trying to decide between Cape Cod, the Vineyard, and the Hamptons. He nodded. They sounded like reasonable choices for her and Salima, and a nice vacation for them. And Becky worked out well, he confirmed. He could tell Salima liked her, from her texts, and she had reported that her mother did too. Very. She's not exciting, but she's very sweet. And they're like 2 kids together. I think Salima has taught her more than she's taught Salima. But it seems to work, and she's very responsible when I'm gone. She didn't say that it was nothing like when he was there. There was no point. Nothing in her life was the same without him, and wouldn't be again. but she didn't want to look back, only forward. They both had to move on, and he already had. And she had something important to look forward to now, too. He had mentioned looking for an apartment in New York, and she assumed it was for him, Megan, and her three boys. "Blaze, I wanted to tell you how sorry I am about how confused I was when I left." She stopped him before he could say more. "That's all over, Simon. We don't need to talk about it." And she didn't want to. Just seeing him was painful enough. "After a while, I figured if I called, you'd hang up on me. And I didn't want to write an email. I wanted to come and see you and talk to you myself, but I couldn't leave Caldwell till now. I got here last night, so I came to see you today." He had walked around all morning before he did, trying to decide what to say to her and how. "It doesn't matter," she said gently. "It does to me. It all matters. How I left, what happened when I got there. You have a right to know." "You look happy," she said, trying not to remember how much she'd loved him, or that his son was in her belly, which he didn't know and couldn't see, but she would tell him later, in 4 more months. "I'm fine, too. You gave us enormous gifts while you were here, both of us. You gave Salima independence, which is an incredible gift, and what we shared was wonderful. But some things aren't meant to last. What we had didn't. Let's leave it there. You have Megan and a new job to look forward to. You have a lot of life ahead of you, and I'm happy as I am." She was trying to convince both him and herself as she said it, and he shook his head with a pained expression. He could see in her eyes how much he had hurt her. "I left Megan 3 days after I got back to Caldwell." He was staring at her intensely as he said it. "And I found out everything I needed to know. I can't be with a woman that dishonest, even if she did leave Jack for me in the end. I don't think she did. She left him for herself, which was the right thing to do, but that doesn't obligate me to spend my life with her. I couldn't. I'd have been miserable with her. I knew it after the first dinner I had with her. Nothing happened with Megan, Blaze. I wasn't clear about it until I saw her, and then it was crystal clear. I wasn't in love with her anymore. I was in love with you, and I still am. You may not want me anymore, and I don't blame you if you feel that way after 4 months of silence. But I needed to know more than that. I wanted to come back to you with a job I'm excited about, to know that I could bring something to the table other than truffle pasta and cheese souffle. And I needed to be sure about one other thing. And I am. I wanted to be sure that I don't care about having children, so I wouldn't regret it later. I don't need to have babies. I'd rather be with Salima and you. I love you, Blaze." She saw all the pain he'd been through, and it was mirrored by her own. But they had both come out of it better people, whatever happened now. "I love you, and I don't expect you to take me back. I just wanted you to know it, and that I wasn't wasting my time for these 4 months. I was quiet because I needed to know how I really felt about everything. I grew up. Maybe too late for you, but I did. And if you're happy now, I'm glad. I can't imagine the pain I must have caused you for the past 4 months while I was growing up." She sat looking at him for a long time, and she wasn't sure what to say. They had each grown and moved on, and had wound up in a different place. It was ironic, and she smiled at him. "What made you decide to give up having kids?" she asked him. "Because I love you more than any child, and I'd rather be with you. I wanted to be sure that I was okay about giving that up, and I am. I understand why you don't want them, and I'm fine with it." He had come to all the right conclusions, the ones she had hoped to hear, but he had arrived a little late. "It's strange how life works. I've been doing a lot of thinking, too. I came to kind of a crossroads in March when I had to make a big decision, one of those life-changing moments when what you decide will affect the rest of your life. And I landed in the opposite place you did. I wish you'd told me about Megan, by the way. It might have helped. I made all my decisions based on the assumption that you were back with her for good. It would have been nice to know you ended it with her after 3 days. It would have spared her a lot of pain and suffering, but he hadn't called. He hadn't been ready for her yet, and maybe it was for the best, she realized now. Because she had made the right choice for herself, not for them or him. "I'm sorry," he said humbly. "So what decision did you make in March?" A chill ran down his spine as he wondered if she was involved with someone else now, someone she loved more than him, maybe someone her own age who was more mature. He thought she looked more beautiful than ever, and wondered if that was why. "Are you involved with someone now, in a serious way?" His heart nearly stopped while he waited for the answer, and she nodded. He closed his eyes for a moment when she did. "I was such a fool," he said softly, and then looked at her again with deep regret. "Maybe I was too. I expected you to know all the answers immediately because I thought I did. We both had some growing up to do. You were smarter than I was about that. And I'm not involved with someone the way you think I am, although it's very serious and very long-term. Forever, actually. I came to a different conclusion than you did about having babies. I decided that I want to have another child." She looked peaceful as she said it. He looked shocked. "When did you decide that?" She waited an eternity before she answered, while he could feel his heart pounding in his chest. He looked at her, and she looked no different, except even lovelier than before, and all he wanted was to take her in his arms. "I decided it when I found out I was pregnant with your baby, a little boy." He looked like he'd been shot out of a cannon as he stared at her. "Why didn't you tell me? When did that happen?" "In January, apparently. I found out at the end of February. I thought you were with Megan and had made your decision, so I decided not to tell you until the baby was born. I always planned to tell you then, but I didn't want to impose on you or intrude while I was pregnant." He looked like he was going to cry when she said it, and he moved closer to where she sat. "Does Salima know?" He was horrified that he had known nothing about it and hadn't been there for her. "Not yet. I'll have to tell her soon, though. Probably by next month. She knows how much I love you. She'll be okay with it. I haven't told anyone until you right now. I decided it was a gift, and I accepted the gift. That's what I decided in March." "How could you not tell me and do this all by yourself?" There was accusation in his voice as well as guilt. What if she had never told him? He would have been deprived of his son and her. "You didn't need to know before he was born if you were with Megan or whoever else. You can have visitation and see him whenever you want. He's your son too." As he sat next to her, he put a gentle hand on her white shirt and felt the baby move. He looked at Blaze with tears in his eyes. "I don't deserve you, but I love you so much. When are you having him?" "End of September, beginning of October. I'll call you the minute he comes," she promised. And Simon looked heartbroken as he sat next to her. "Is it over for you? With us, I mean?" "In some ways, it's just beginning with him. We have a lot of years ahead of us to share this child. If nothing else, we can be friends, and should be for his sake." She was at peace about it. "I want more than that, Blaze. I want what we had before." He sounded determined as he said it. "Even if I was an idiot and didn't deserve you, probably still don't, and maybe never will." He looked at her humbly, and she shook her head and smiled. "I'm not sure I deserved you," she smiled. "I'm too old for you, too settled in my life. I know what I want and who I am. You reminded me of that, to never forget who I am. I did forget for a long time, with Andrew and even with you. All I wanted was to be with you at any price. I wanted to forget how old I was, how young you are, the difference in our ages, where we were in our lives. You left because you wanted Megan. You thought you wanted someone your own age, and you were right. You don't need someone like me. I loved her the way you loved Andrew, even though he was wrong for you. You got taken in by him. Megan fooled me. She has no integrity, no soul, no heart. You are everything I want, and I've been looking for all my life, and I don't give a damn how old you are. You're young enough to be having my baby, so don't give me that. And with that, he took her in his arms and kissed her, and her head swam as he did. She wanted to forget all the reasons why it didn't seem right to her anymore, but she wasn't sure she could. Besides, your mother would kill you, she said after they kissed, and he laughed. I don't care what she thinks. After pretending to be so bohemian all her life, she turns out to be a lot more bourgeois than she thinks. You and I love each other, that's all. No time, no years, no age. It worked when we were together. And now we have a baby. Blaze, give us a chance. Please. It won't be perfect. Nothing ever is. But let's try. For all three of our sakes. And even Salima. I didn't even know about the baby. And I came here today to tell you how much I love you. On the off, crazy, wonderful chance that you still love me too and are nuts enough to try again. I do love you, she said, smiling at him. I never stopped, especially once I knew about the baby. Well, then? And what happens when some young girl comes along in 2 or 10 or 20 years, and you fall in love with her? You're the only woman I want, now and in 20 years, 50 years. I didn't come back for the baby I didn't even know about. I came back for you. She didn't answer him, and he kissed her again. And she could feel all the hurt of the past 4 months slipping away from her and disappearing into the mist. He pulled her to her feet then, and put his arms around her. I love you. I will always love you, no matter how old you are. What he was saying was what she had wanted to hear, what she had hoped he would come back to say, even when she told him to leave. It was what she had wanted from Andrew and Harry before that. And Simon was the only man who'd ever said it, and been there for the right reasons. He was there for her, not the trappings or the stardom or her job. He only wanted her. You know we're crazy if we do this. I'm 15 years older than you are. When I'm 50, you'll be 35. When I'm 60, you'll be 45 and still gorgeous. It's okay. I may have been an idiot for the past 4 months, but I can count. And I don't give a damn about what anyone thinks or says, except you and Salima. To hell with everyone else. I've never found anyone like you, and I know I never will again. I'm not willing to give that up. Neither am I, she said softly, as she looked up at him and smiled. They were there because they loved each other truly and profoundly. And she knew that now, and so did he. There were no doubts, no questions that needed to be answered. There were just the two of them, solidly on their path. He was smiling at her, and he had never been so sure of anything in his life. And so was she. Chapter 18. Simon, Blaze, and Salima went to Bordeaux to visit his uncle and cousins in July. They had a wonderful time, and they stopped in Paris on the way back. Salima had never been there before, and they took her everywhere, and she loved it. They walked all over Paris, went to Notre Dame and Sacré-Cœur, the Louvre, Versailles, ate lunch in bistros, and walked through the Tuileries Gardens and Bois de Boulogne, and went shopping. And Salima slept in her own room at the Ritz. They didn't take Becky. It was a family trip, and she went home to New Hampshire for 3 weeks while they were away. Blaze had told Salima about the baby in June, and she was wonderful about it and promised to help. She was thrilled when Simon came back. And just before they left for Europe, she got accepted to Juilliard. She and Simon both had new adventures to look forward to in September, and the baby right after that. The network was fine about the pregnancy, and wanted Blaze to take at least 4 weeks off after the birth, and she negotiated them down to 3. She had already hired a baby nurse who was going to sleep in the room next to Becky's, and she had offered to help with Salima, too. But Salima didn't need a lot of help, and she would be busy at school, and she and Simon argued about a guide dog on the plane on the way back. They were an even match, and he was with Blaze, too. After the trip, he had promised to teach them both French and teach Salima to cook. They each brought something to the table, their special talents and gifts. August whizzed by with a heat wave that made Blaze uncomfortable as she got bigger. She was determined to work as hard as ever and continued taping interviews. She even impressed Zack with her energy and determination, despite her pregnancy. She finally admitted to it on air during one of her morning segments, and the network was flooded with gifts for the baby, which really touched her. Simon, Blaze, and Salima rented a house in the Hamptons and went out every weekend. And some weeks, Becky and Salima stayed there and had a ball. And Becky was off on Saturdays and Sundays, which gave her time to spend with a new boyfriend she had met while they were in Europe. He was a struggling artist and a very nice guy, and Salima liked him too. Simon started his new job at the end of August before Salima began at Juilliard. It was very exciting for him. The school was in the Bronx. The students were from age 3 to 21, and Simon worked with the older ones, which was his strength, as he had demonstrated with Salima. The program was more extensive than what he'd been able to do at Caldwell, and he showed Blaze and Salima around the second week he was there. He was ecstatic, and he could hardly wait for the baby to come. His life was complete, with Salima and Blaze, their baby, and his new job. The week after he started at the New York Institute for Special Education, Salima started at Juilliard. She had a wonderful advisor whose main job was to keep Salima from signing up for every class they offered. She signed up for a heavy course load, and Becky took her to school on the bus every day. And Salima used her white cane while she was there and didn't care. All she could think of were the music classes she was taking, two of them with Luciana, who was incredibly proud of her. She joined a church choir in Harlem for extra course credit, and she was so busy with classes and after-school activities that Simon and Blaze hardly saw her, and she had 1,000 new things to tell them every night. Blaze was still working at the network on her due date on the 1st of October, and she felt huge by then. The baby was a good size, and in the last days of her pregnancy, she looked like she was going to pop any minute. Simon happened to be watching her morning segment before he left for school on the baby's scheduled due date. She was talking about a recent scandal in the Senate when he saw an odd expression cross her face. She maintained her concentration, but he had the sense that something was wrong, and called her immediately when she came off the air. She answered her cell phone as soon as she saw it was him. "Are you okay?" he asked, feeling nervous, about to leave for school, but he wanted to be sure she was all right first. She had looked odd to him. "I think so," she said hesitantly. "My water broke while I was on the air. I was going to call the doctor in a minute. I'm glad you called." And he was startled to realize she sounded scared. It was so unlike her that all he wanted to do was get to her and reassure her and take her in his arms. "I'll be right over," he said immediately. He had already warned the school that they were expecting a baby any day, and they'd been very nice about it. "I'm not so sure that's a good idea," Blaze said in a strained voice. "I don't know what happened, but I'm having contractions every 4 minutes." He tried not to panic when she said it, and made an effort to sound calmer than he felt for her. "That's okay, sweetheart. Get Mark or Charlie to take you to the hospital with Tully. I'll meet you there in 10 minutes. Have Mark call the doctor. Right away." "Okay," she said meekly. She was having trouble talking through a contraction, and Mark appeared as it was happening, and was terrified at the look on her face as she handed her BlackBerry to him and Simon told him what to do. "Call the doctor and bring her to the hospital immediately. She's having the baby," he told Mark with a calm he didn't feel, as he ran out of the apartment, and Mark promised to get her to the hospital as fast as Tully could drive them there. Everyone who saw her leave cheered as Mark and Charlie led her away, and Blaze waved and smiled wanly. She really had stayed until the last minute. "Christ, were you planning to have it at your desk between meetings?" Charlie scolded her as they crossed the lobby and found Tully outside. But Blaze didn't say a word. She was in too much pain. It had all happened so fast. And on his way to the hospital, Simon called Becky and told her to pick up Salima at Juilliard. She wanted to be there too, and after some hesitation, Blaze had agreed. After that, Simon got minute-by-minute reports from Mark in the car with her. while Tully drove through midtown morning traffic as fast as possible, praying he wouldn't have to deliver the baby. Mark told Simon the doctor was on her way. It took them 20 minutes to get to the hospital, and Simon was on the sidewalk waiting for them when Tully pulled up and Mark hopped out immediately, looking panicked. "Get a doctor, fast! She's going to have it really soon!" Blaze could no longer walk or talk by then, and looked relieved when Simon got in the car with her and gently helped her out. Mark had gotten a nurse with a wheelchair, who sized the situation up immediately and literally ran the wheelchair with Blaze in it into the building, saying only, "Let's get you upstairs," as Simon ran beside them, and Blaze clutched his hand in a vice-like grip. "I love you," she managed to say between contractions. "I love you too," Simon said, trying to reassure her. But everything was happening so fast, it was hard to say anything. The doctor was waiting for them when the elevator opened at labor and delivery. She took one look at Blaze, and they took her straight to a birthing room. And Simon and a nurse had her clothes off in less than a minute. There was no time for drugs or an epidural, explanations, or anything except Simon telling her he loved her, and Blaze moaning with the pain as they got her on the delivery table. And the doctor checked her with a look of satisfaction and smiled at Simon and Blaze. "I think we're ready for a birthday party," she said, and told Blaze to push as Simon watched in wonder, and Blaze gave a terrifying scream as their son's head emerged from between her legs, and he looked at his parents with surprise. He was born with the next contraction. As Simon and Blaze cried and laughed and watched with amazement as the doctor lifted him onto her stomach, and the baby looked around as the doctor cut the cord. The baby was beautiful, looked like Simon, had Blaze's red hair, and was totally alert. Less than an hour before, Blaze had been on the air. None of them had expected him to come so fast, and he weighed just under 9 pounds. Salim arrived just minutes after he'd been born, and Blaze was holding him by then. A nurse led Salima to her mother, and she cried when she kissed her and touched the baby's cheek. "I came as fast as I could," she said apologetically. "If your mom had done this any faster, she'd have had him during a commercial on the air," Simon said, still in awe of the miracle they'd just seen. They took Blaze to a room a little while later, and the three of them spent the day together, taking turns holding the baby. And in between, the baby nursed. Becky came to take Salima home that evening, and Simon spent the night with Blaze, and in the morning they went home. They were a family, and had welcomed Edmund Charles Ward into their midst. He was named after Simon's uncle in Bordeaux. The apartment was filled with flowers when they got home, and gifts continued to arrive all day. The network had sent her an antique bassinet filled with baby clothes and teddy bears. Harry had sent enormous flowers and balloons. The baby's birth had been announced on the evening news. As a result, there were so many gifts and flowers in the apartment they could hardly walk around. Teresa the housekeeper, Natalie the baby nurse, and Becky were in the kitchen. Salima was hanging out with Simon and her mother in the bedroom with the baby, and by dinner time, Simon had realized the obvious. "I think we may have to move," he said to Blaze with a look of astonishment. They were exploding out of her pristine apartment, and she laughed. "I thought we might." She looked peaceful and ecstatic as the baby nursed, and Simon lay next to her to admire them both. He had never seen anything so beautiful in his life. Simon's mother waited until the day after they got home to come and visit them from Boston. Simon's father was too busy, but he promised he'd come to meet the baby soon. The minute Isabel walked through the door, she commented that they were living like gypsies, and she hoped they were planning to move. "We just figured that out ourselves," Simon said. The apartment was bursting at the seams. But his mother looked awestruck when she saw the baby, and smiled proudly at her son. She had been knitting tiny blue booties and caps for the last month, and had written him a poem that had no point and made no sense, which she read them that afternoon. She held the baby, and he slept peacefully in her arms, and when she handed him back to Blaze, she spoke to Simon in a disapproving tone. "I hope you're planning to marry her now," Isabel said about Blaze, as though she weren't in the room. She looked sleepy as she nursed. "I thought you thought she was too old for me," Simon teased his mother. You have a child now, Simon. You can't just live together like artists or poets. She has a respectable job, and so do you. Don't be so bourgeois, maman. What kind of bohemian are you? He said, and laughed as she sat down on the bed next to Blaise, whom he loved with all his heart, even if she was not his wife. They hadn't gotten married, and didn't see why they should, despite what his mother thought. Or if they decided to, they would do it in their own time, for reasons that mattered to them. It's a shame the baby has red hair, Isabel said wistfully as she gazed at him. Let's hope it turns dark. Blaise laughed. The comment was so like her. We can always dye it, Blaise suggested. I don't think that's a good idea, Isabel said in a worried tone. The baby nurse and Teresa were trying to get organized. Becky was helping wherever possible, and Salima picked the baby up as soon as Isabel set him down. It was easy to tell that he was always going to be in someone's hands. He had doting parents and a loving sister, and a grandmother who loved him despite the color of his hair. Isabel held him in her arms again before she left the next day. At least his hair is not quite as red as yours, she said to Blaise reassuringly, looking at her daughter-in-law affectionately. Isabel was thrilled with her new grandson, and she reminded them again to get married, as though they might forget. Blaise and Simon didn't share her concern. L'amour n'a pas d'âge, she said, referring to Simon and Blaise. Love has no age. And she looked pensive for a moment as she said goodbye to Blaise. Do you realize that when Simon is 55, you'll be 70 years old? Isabel said to her. Blaise had just turned 48 and Simon 33 that summer. And the fact that they were together and had Edmund was miracle enough for Blaise. They didn't care about the math. We can all count, Mother, Simon said with a look of exasperation as he escorted his mother out. And Salima bent over the baby to stroke his cheek again. She loved holding him and feeling his face next to hers. And when you're 85, I'll be 100, Blaise whispered to Simon with a grin, when he came back into the room and she was nursing his son. Edmund looked drunk with delight, and his father grinned. That sounds good to me, he said, smiling at her. They had each found the person that they had always wanted and needed. It had just come in a different package than they'd expected. They'd been wise enough to see it, and brave enough to grab it, and know it was a gift. The numbers were of no importance, only the people and the love they shared. Simon had given her everything she'd ever wanted and longed for in her life, and Blaise was the woman he'd been looking for and hadn't known it till he saw her. They completed each other, and each was better and had a fuller life because of the other. And with all the humanity that made it special and unique, it wasn't perfect, and they didn't need it to be. But it was very, very close to perfect. It was exactly the life they wanted it to be. We hope you've enjoyed our presentation of A Perfect Life, a novel by Danielle Steele. Copyright 2014 by Danielle Steele. Performed by Eduardo Ballerini. Directed by Lewis Milgram. Performance copyright 2014 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.